know what the deal was there. The music wouldn't turn down. Hey, folks. Whoa, it's still not turning down. Hey, folks, welcome to another edition of Liberty Unbridled. I am your host, Ken Molman, and we have music that is determining its own volume level today here on the My Few Matters Radio Network. I don't really know why it's still not turning down, but really? Let's see if that works. There we go. Wow. Some weird technical issues tonight, folks. I apologize. I don't really know what's going on there, but you are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters Radio Network. I am your host, Ken Molman, and we've got a few topics on the agenda tonight. We've got hemp, tobacco, guns, and alcohol, you know, all the good stuff. And if you'd like to call in about any of these topics tonight, you can do so by calling area code 858-683-1326. Again, it's area code 858-683-1326. So to get started, as is typical on the show, when there's news with the LP of any, you know, substance or that would be something of state interest, we like to air it here on the air because we in the LP, and I am a member of the LP, obviously, for those that don't know, I've been involved with the Libertarian Party for a number of years. The LP doesn't get nearly as much media coverage as I believe it should, so I give it to it here. And so we had, in Northern Kentucky this week, there was a story written, and it's actually an entertaining story on how it got written, but there was a story written on the Libertarian Party and its growth in the region in Northern Kentucky, but also really statewide. And it was a very good article. It's kind of funny how it came about. I guess I can tell that story real quick. A reporter called up and asked about the smoking ban issue that I'm also involved in. And there had been some claims made by the opposition, the folks in favor of the smoking ban, that we were basically getting people from other states to call and impersonate Kentucky residents, and they wanted to know what I had to say about that. And, of course, that was untrue. And we went through and explained how and why emails and how our stuff works and showed it to the guy in the media. And he was, you know, after that, the story was pretty much dead. And so he asked me what else was going on. I mentioned that the LP was growing like crazy right now and had been really since October. And he said, really, that sounds like a story. And so 25 minutes later, we had a nice story, you know, outline built. And then I put him in touch with our state chairman and also two of the county chairmen up here in the 4th District. And because our county orgs up here are relatively new, and that was part of the story. And it came out to be a very, very good article for us. And so that was very good. Perhaps the best part of it was that in searching out the information, the reporter called down to Frankfort to find out how many registered libertarians there were in the state at this point. And for those that don't know, they only started tracking libertarian registrations as new registrations as of January 1st, 2006. Now, on top of that, it's up to the county clerks to do that, and there's a number of counties that aren't doing it right, and we've been working on that. But the number of registered libertarians in Kentucky as of, that would have been Monday or Tuesday, I guess probably Tuesday now, was 2,816. Now, in May of 2012, the Libertarian Party purchased the statewide voter list, and at that time, 9 months ago, there were only 2,109 people registered libertarian. That means that 707 people have signed up new for the Libertarian Party in the past 9 months, or a 33% increase in voter registrations over the course of 9 months. And that's a pretty significant growth. What's also interesting in part of this, stuff I've been working on the back end with the LP, is figuring out, we're building a list of all these members and all these people and combining everything together and trying to sort out who's who, where, why, and how, and you know, really do some information gathering to really understand who it is we should be targeting as a party and all that kind of stuff. And what's interesting about that is that we're finding the breakdown of those who are coming to the Libertarian Party, what their previous party affiliation was. And of those who were registered and were not registered as other or something else, independent or whatever, it's breaking down 60% Republican, 40% Democrat. And there's a lot of people who thought that that Republican percentage would have been much higher, given everything that's going on with the Republican Party basically kicking the liberty-minded members of their organization in the face repeatedly on a pretty regular basis. They figured that that would be the number one place where this was being driven from. But what we're finding is that is not the case, and that, in fact, where we're picking up the most, or not the most, but picking up a lot of members, is from the Democratic Party as well. And I think a lot of that is not really surprising to me. I think that you look at what's happening in Washington, you look at what's happening here in the state, and there's just a general feeling out there that Republicans and Democrats are just completely out of touch, not the individual people or members, but the parties are just out of touch, and that a lot of the elected officials are just downright out of touch with what people want and what people are hoping to do. I just realized I didn't launch the chat today, so I'm going to do that right now. So if you're listening and wanting to jump in the chat room, you just need to reload and you can jump in now. I apologize for that. So that was the bit of good news. Other things on the Libertarian Party front, we do have our state convention this coming Saturday in Bowling Green. You can go to our website, lpky.org, and learn about that if you want. But we hold annual conventions. All positions in the party are two-year terms. So at every convention, somebody's getting elected to some level of the party. Everything's kind of staggered that way so that we don't, you know, lose institutional knowledge along the way. But it's set up that it's staggered and two-year terms. And so if you're interested in that, check out the website, lpky.org. And I guess the last note on the Libertarian Party front is that I am announcing, I guess publicly, that I am seeking the office of state chair for the party again. I was the state chairman for 4 years, from 2007 to 2011, and I am now going to seek a third term after taking a two-year break and having run for office and been the 4th district chair for a while to take the chairmanship over again. And so that's really that. Other than that, other news, our 1st and 2nd district parties voted to affiliate themselves. They are back in action and running again. So those of you out there in the 1st and 2nd district, if you want to get involved in the LP, you can do that now. And there'll be a vote on the official affiliation of the 1st and 2nd districts on, it'll be at the convention on Saturday. So they'll be made legit then. And, of course, we already had groups active in the 3rd, 4th, and 6th districts. And so the only thing we're really missing now is Eastern Kentucky. So, and we have county parties trying to spin up in all these areas as well. So if you're interested in getting involved, now's the time. And we'll move off of that because I don't want to make the show about the Libertarian Party, but, you know, there's a lot going on. And make sure that those who are interested have some way of finding out because, in general, the media usually doesn't print anything about us, so that's why we do that. So moving on, we have an interesting story about, I saw that Steve Beshear is going to block the hemp bill, even if it gets through the state house, that he will, he's against it, and that the story basically is that he's siding with law enforcement against hemp. It's an AP story that came out on Tuesday. Says that he wants law enforcement's concerns resolved before he is willing to support hemp. Now, the problem with that, of course, is that law enforcement's concern is that they're going to lose some grant money. So I don't really know how you resolve that exactly, but that is where he is taking the stand on it. And he also said basically legislators need to weigh the law enforcement concerns carefully given the horrible drug problem that Kentucky is dealing with. And that's basically echoing what House Speaker Greg Stumbo had said the week before. Yes, I you got to watch out for that because, you know, when you talk about the drug epidemic in Kentucky, you know, that marijuana, that's really, that's what's driving that. You know, that's what's really the problem here. It's certainly not that meth or the prescription opiates that are a problem. It's the marijuana. That's definitely what's got people all messed up throughout the state. You know, all the while, and this is kind of an interesting thing, the Courier-Journal had a study come out, it looks like this week, and the Courier-Journal study came out about marijuana and hemp and the particular support behind each one. Industrial hemp is 65% support, 22% opposed, and 13% don't know, which is not a big surprise because industrial hemp is not something that in the past has been out there, so that, you know, the typical 7% who don't know what the heck's going on, in this particular study, it's 13. That's not a huge surprise. In medical marijuana, so for you know, this is, you know, 65% support for hemp, which we've been over that on the show plenty of times to explain that you can't get high off of hemp and moving on from that. The medical marijuana, which is a popular movement throughout the United States and several states have adopted it, shows 60% support here in Kentucky. 31% oppose it, 9% aren't sure. And for full-blown marijuana legalization for anyone over the age 21 or older, 39% support it, 49% oppose it, 13% don't know. I don't know how 13% don't know, but that is what it is. And each of those polls has a rough plus or minus a 4% margin of error. So the hemp issue, even if you take the 4% and swing it the other direction, that's still over 60%. You swing 4% off of medical marijuana, that's still 55%. If you swing, and really, honestly, I guess that makes it almost a statistical tie, but oppose full-blown legalization still barely wins with the plus or minus 4%. So, with 13% undecided, certainly that issue is not, the door is not closed on that issue, seeing it as it's so close. But it's interesting that with 65% support for industrial hemp and the studies that have been done, and the evidence that's out there that shows you cannot get high off of industrial hemp, which now the police and all them do concede that now. They're saying, yeah, you can't get high off industrial hemp. Now their concern is, well, what if somebody sneaks a marijuana plant in the middle of a hemp field? That's their new thing. And the reality is that it's not going to work out well in the long term. You know, you might be able in the very short term to sneak a little bit that way, but it's not going to work in the long term, and it's just kind of stupid. So you're penalizing an entire industry because there might be a few ding-dongs out there that abuse it. You know, people abuse their cars every day. Should we take cars away from everyone? I mean, come on. Let's be real here. And there is, despite what is said, there is a growing market, actually, for hemp right now. As has been seen in Canada, now that their markets have stabilized on hemp, that they have legalized the growing of hemp in Canada, their markets have stabilized and are, you know, consistently, you know, slow growth, but it's growing. So there is a market there, and we are importing hemp from Canada and from China to the United States. And so why not grow it here? And at one time, Kentucky was the number one producer of hemp in the United States. So that's the big push behind hemp. But I did find the study about the medical marijuana support. I was actually surprised, but I think it's a smart thing that 60% support medical marijuana. You know, the reality is that a bureaucrat shouldn't be in between you and your doctor. I think pretty much everybody would agree with that. And I see somebody, hey, that's Frank. Frank wants to talk. Frank, buddy, I'm trying to bring you on. There you are. How you doing, Frank?
Hey, Ken. What's going on, man?
I'm just jabbering away. What's going on?
Well, you know, forgive me. I just tuned in about a minute ago, so I hope you haven't already talked about this. But, you know, one of the things that would just be revolutionary for small farmers like we have here in Kentucky is the fact that you could make your own biodiesel. And, you know, farms could – have you covered this?
I have not covered this, and I don't know that we've actually covered biodiesel from hemp on the show at all. So we may need to rewind a little bit and explain to folks that it can be used that way.
Well, the industrial hemp seed is one of the most potent sources of oil. The seed is 50% oil. It is perfect for making your own biodiesel with. So if you're a farmer, if you're a small farmer, and you have a diesel tractor or diesel truck, you could make your own oil. And, you know, you can process that stuff really cheaply now. So you wouldn't have to buy it from anybody else. You could take your own seed, you could squeeze the oil out, process it yourself, and be energy independent. So you could run your own farm, without having to pay for fuel. And that's just one thing that would be just incredible for farmers here in Kentucky. I think that's part of the reason why they don't want to make it legal. They don't really want us to be independent. They want us to be dependent on big oil. They want us to be dependent on big pharma and the petrochemical industry. They don't want farmers to be independent.
Well, apparently they don't want farmers at all, given what's going on. I mean, we lose family farms every day. Well, no, I mean, it's sad. I mean, it is funny to say it, but it's really sad to see, you know, family farms destroyed every day, whether it's from inheritance taxes that are too high or some stupid regulation that kills an entire industry worth of crops and farms or what it is.
Dairy farming is a losing proposition in this state. They run off 50% of the dairy farmers from 10 years ago were no longer in business, and they're losing money for every gallon of milk they sell below $4 a gallon.
Sure. Well, you know, and it's not a big surprise. That's one thing I've noticed over time. You know, milk is how much is milk now? About $3 a gallon?
Well, you can find it for under $3 a gallon if you shop around. It's usually around $3 at Walmart. Aldi's has it usually for between $2 and $3. But yeah, it's creeping up, and there's every indication that it's going to bust through $4 real soon.
Yeah, I'm not a big milk drinker. That's why I don't know how much it costs. I never really have liked milk, but and it shows I'm in great shape. Anyway, the point is that something I've noticed over time, and I don't know if it's on purpose or if it's just completely corollary, but typically speaking, the price of a gallon of milk and the price of a gallon of gas roughly are the same. As they've gotten higher, they've kind of deviated from that as much. But, you know, I remember as a kid, gas was 99 cents a gallon and milk was 99 cents a gallon.
It's been a long time since milk was under a dollar a gallon. Yeah, I can't remember.
Man, it's been a long time since I was a
kid.
It's been a while. But I guess the point is that, there are some artificial subsidies obviously involved in milk. And I saw a story, and I can't remember what it was about now. Maybe you remember. Why is it that the milk stuff is about to spike? Why is the milk price about to spike?
Well, you know, I don't remember the reasons. I don't know if it has to do with fuel prices or if it has to do with commodity prices or the fact that, what it takes to keep cows alive, the grain and the feeds and all that, is being diverted into other things. But just essentially commodities of all kinds are going up. As you run off more dairy farmers, your supply is dropping off. So there's a lot of factors to why it should be going up. When you don't have anybody, making milk anymore, obviously the price is going to spike.
Right, and I just found the story. I remember this now. This was about the fiscal cliff stuff, and there's something about subsidies for milk involved in the fiscal cliff stuff, and that was why the price was going to go up. This is an article
That's
from New Year's Eve.
Too. Yeah.
This is an article from New Year's Eve where they say the average price of milk, the average gallon of milk on New Year's Eve was $3.53 a gallon. That's about in line with what gas was on New Year's Eve. You know, it was
about
that.
Also import a large percentage of our milk from out of state. So that's another big factor in here in Kentucky, why it's going up.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's not necessarily a surprise. The well, I guess the point is that, and actually I don't know why we're talking about milk. but,
hemp.
Yes, that's where we were, hemp. I was wondering how we got here. The point is that hemp is a very versatile crop that can be used for lots of different things. And it can
feedstock
be used as human
cows.
Food.
It's ideal for feedstock.
Right. And humans can eat it as well, parts of it.
Yes.
I know I saw an article that Ralph Nader apparently is a big fan of eating ground hemp seeds on cereal. That they
buy hemp cereal. You can buy it here in Lexington at the Good Foods Co-op. There's some that's already in boxes. There's other kinds you buy in bulk and you put it in plastic bags yourself. But you can find hemp cereal.
And I'll be honest with you, you know, with this issue coming up and having done some more research, I'm actually thinking about buying some and trying it because why not? Apparently it's really good for you. It doesn't taste bad.
It's good. I'll tell you what, I'll hook you up with some next week when we go down to the state convention.
That'd be great. I would thoroughly enjoy that. I think that, you know, based on Ralph Nader's recommendation.
it's a lot like granola. I don't know if they add sweetener to it or if it's naturally sweet, but the kind they sell at the Good Foods Co-op is just a little bit sweet, and it's really tasty.
Well, I definitely am interested to try it. And, you know, I mean, why not? And if it really is, I mean, there's a bunch of good amino acids in it and things that are very good for humans to consume. So I'll try it. And if it doesn't taste bad, hey, you got to eat. You might as well eat something good if it's good, you know.
Hey, we'll save money on motel food anyway.
That's right. So, Frank, I was actually going to delve into next let's see here. I've lost my my notes for the show, but the tobacco issue, and I don't know if you want to talk about that or if you want me to throw you back on hold or what you want to do.
Go for it. That's not my particular field of expertise, but I might be able to offer an opinion or something. Who knows?
Well, I know we're going to get back to guns here in a little bit, too, and we'll bring you back in for that because I know you've got stuff on
Great.
That, too. You've
Fantastic.
Been kind of leading that up. So I'm going to put you back on hold. And we'll get to the smoking ban stuff here real quick. The latest in the smoking ban, as I mentioned in the show, there's been lots of allegations made towards one of the groups that I've been working with, and certainly we're not doing the things that they've alleged and trying to fraudulently flood Frankfurt with calls. These guys don't understand libertarians are against the use of force or fraud, and we actually take an oath to not use those as a means of achieving any goals. And so it's kind of entertaining, but we don't do that. And so the smoking ban bill, the latest in that is that a new floor amendment was proposed, and then that floor amendment was pulled back off, and another floor amendment was proposed by the primary sponsor of the bill. So Floor Amendment 1, so the smoking ban as proposed, for those that haven't been following this issue, bans smoking basically everywhere except your own home or your car. That's pretty much it, and outdoors, but on any business property whatsoever. And the bill also goes as far to ban it in hotel rooms. It bans e-cigarettes in the same way, the electronic cigarettes, in the same way that it bans cigarettes and any other tobacco mechanism of ingesting tobacco or nicotine, really. They have some things in there as well for, you know, people working around it by putting nicotine into some other plant and smoking it. So Stan Lee filed a bill to repeal the e-cigarette portion, or it didn't file a bill, but an amendment to repeal the e-cigarette portion out of the proposed bill. A second floor amendment was filed by the original sponsor who put the e-cigarettes back in and made some technical changes to smoking laboratories, whatever the heck that's all about. And then after that, apparently it was done wrong because she pulled that floor amendment back and posted a new one that has the same description, but it must have had some technical changes that they wanted. So that's where the smoking ban issue is. I've heard rumors that we've about killed this thing. So if you haven't done so already, there's a flurry of bills out there, things that are good and bad and things that need to be supported and things that need to be killed. But if you haven't called down to Frankfort to stop the smoking ban, I would ask that you do that on Monday. Leave a message for all your House reps and all the House reps, not just yours, but all the House reps, and ask them to oppose House Bill 190, which is the statewide smoking ban. The reality is it's taking care of itself. Up here in northern Kentucky, the only places that you can really smoke anymore are a handful of restaurants. It's a very small minority now. And it is still the majority of bars, but there are smoke-free bars now as well. So this is something that has been resolved by the market. And in other places like Louisville and Lexington that have passed their bans, and a number of other communities in Kentucky, they put exemptions in that fit their particular needs. And this bill would override all of those exemptions that they've put in throughout the state and various communities that they put in on purpose. I mean, it wasn't like an accident. Oops, we accidentally wrote out hotel rooms or whatever. They did it on purpose to meet the specific needs and concerns of the community. And in any case, and for Campbell County, for instance, that repealed their ban, in any case, no matter which way you look at it, this is Frankfort overriding local decisions that have been made throughout the state. And that's another very good reason to oppose this bill, that if a smoking ban is good for a community, fine, let the community deal with that at their level. Don't push whoever's grand vision down on the rest of the state. No ban in Kentucky that's been passed by a legislative body, that's an important note, is as extreme as what's being proposed in Frankfort right now. So this will stomp all over, even all the local bans all over the state and the decisions that were made in that regard. So let's see here. We're about at the bottom of the hour. We're about right where I wanted to be. So let's take a break here for a few minutes. And when we come back, we'll resume. We're going to talk about guns. We'll bring Frank back on for that because Frank's been all over the gun issue and a few others. And, you know, we'll wrap the show up about 8 like we usually do. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters Radio Network. Back in just a moment. We'll start right now. Nope, now. There we go.
The next sound reflects a complex hybrid dialect now. Detect the mesh of many elements compressed down. The melting pot of a super futuristic style. The combination of a vocal caress with lungs that gasp for breath from emotional stress to special effects. In a distorted collage, carefully lies between beats of a rhythmic barrage. It's going down. The logical progression on the timeline. The separation narrowed down to a fine line. To blur the edges so they blend together properly. Take you on an audible odyssey now. It's going down.
Put it out for the world to see. LP and X-Men, here they can't be free.
Whatever the weather be, we're advancing steadily. It's going down.
subterrestrial hide. A rhyme regiment that's calling the shots. An execution of collaborative plots, ready to bring the separation of style that'll stop us going down. A logical progression on the timeline. The separation narrowed down to a fine line. To blur the edges so they blend together properly. Taking one and out of a lot of scene now. It's going down.
Put it out for the world to see. LP and X-Men, grid that can't be free. It's going down. Nobody in the world is safe. When we melt down, no act for the arrest is free. It's going down. Put it out for the world to see. LP and X-Men, grid that can't be free. It's going down.
Folks, we're back here on My View Matters Radio Network. This is the Liberty Unbridled Show. If you'd like to call in about any of the topics we're talking about tonight, do so at area code 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. We're going to run an ad here, and then we're going to hit the microbrewery beer alcohol stuff going on. And we're supposed to have a guest. I'm hoping he calls in. He may be listening, and this thing's acting horrible tonight, folks, and I apologize. I also heard that it was getting choppy in the last segment. I apologize. That's not my side. So it's Blog Talk. We just deal with it. We roll with it. But for now, here's a quick ad, and we'll be back in just a second.
Oh, being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
All right, folks, we're back. So coming on the phone now is Brian Short. He's a friend of mine down in the Lexington area. He's been following the issue with some of the things going on with the alcohol, microbreweries, and alcohol sales at grocery stores. And, Brian, welcome to the show.
Again, great show so far, and thanks for having me on. First and foremost, recently introduced is House Bill 310, which would ban all sales of beer in grocery stores, forcing them to go to a more distributor-direct route, like a obviously a liquor store. And, there's also House Bill 440, which, actually taxes, the state's microbreweries rather than and give an exemption to larger breweries. And they also these are clearly 14th Amendment, issues and free market issues.
Yeah, so let's hit them one at a time. What's up with the grocery bill? Why are they – what's the reasoning behind this? Why are they trying to crack down on grocery stores?
I believe they're trying to socialize the system, if you will. In Canada, they force all the sales to a liquor store or an ABC type of deal. I believe they're just trying to redirect the market.
They're trying to take control of it. Sure. Well, and I know Ohio does that too, where you have the state liquor stores, and the only place that you can buy alcohol is at these state stores. And I've been to Canada, and it's funny, you know, when you want to buy beer, you go to a place called the beer store. And if you want to buy,
right.
I mean, it's just the funniest
right.
thing.
And actually, you know, the government gets their cut. So we have in Kentucky, nationwide, what's called a three-tier system. You have your producers, you have your consumers, and your post-consumer per se, but you know you have your licensees, your liquor stores, your grocery stores, and I believe they're trying to just kind of force it, you know, more towards that second tier.
I would imagine the
tax collection, everything in the hands of the distributors.
Yeah, I would imagine that part of this is that they're trying to, or at least they'll make the claim that this would somehow reduce sales to underage children. That may be one of the things that they're trying to do here. I mean, have you heard anything on that front? Is that what they're trying to justify this as?
No, I haven't. But I'm sure that argument will come out. I think we should focus on education and, you know, try to, you know, give, you know, inform children why they shouldn't drink, rather than just say, it's a nanny state type thing.
Right. Well, and I was just going to say, you know, it's actually an interesting situation. So something that happened back in the Clinton era was that if you sell cigarettes to an underage person, the fine is phenomenally high. I want to say it's $10,000 to the store. It's either $500 or $1,000 to the employee. The person buying the cigarettes is subject to a felony, et cetera, et cetera. And it's a pretty steep thing, right? So places got really strict about it. And, in fact, you know, there are still places, even though it's no longer the law, that will card you if you look like you're under 40 years old. And
we see that all the time here in Lexington.
Sure.
In fact, it's still standard operating procedure in most places I go.
But my understanding is that the fines for alcohol are still around $500 for the outlet, and I don't even know if the employee faces a civil penalty at all on that front. And I guess the point is that if the goal, if that turns out to be the rallying cry, the goal is to stop underage drinking or stop people from buying alcohol that shouldn't be buying alcohol, wouldn't it be, because we already have a law in place that you have to be 18 in order to sell alcohol. You know, some of these places hire kids that are 16, 17 years old, and they're not allowed to sell it. They have to get somebody else. Right. So I'm wondering if, and a lot of places also have it now that you can only buy cigarettes through one line, right? You go to like a Walmart where there's 20 lines and only three cashiers, but 20 lines, and you can only buy cigarettes at the one line. I'm wondering that if that fine mechanism was in place, that rather than taking it out of the grocery stores and doing all this crazy stuff, you just make it so that the stores end up putting alcohol sales through one line or maybe two lines, whatever demand requires. But these would be people specifically trained to deal with the law regarding selling alcohol to anybody. And it just seems kind of common sense to me that that is the much better answer than ripping it out of the grocery stores, reducing availability, which is what it's going to do, and make it more difficult on consumers.
Well, and also it's going to allow the distributors to, you know, control what the state or enforce what the state taxes. You know, it's not a clear reflection of the market. And, you know, like the microbreweries are a great point of this. But, if they, you know, charge, you know, $11 per barrel produced, and, you know, the distributor has to enforce 11% whatever, you know, barrel that is, you know, I mean, it could be something light, it could be something really, you know, unique, which would actually, you know, like a free market would dictate that is obviously more valuable. But the distributor gets 11%, so they can kind of control, you know, what's popular and what's not. And, you know, I don't know specifically how Bill 440 reads, but, they were even, you know, controlling or wanting to control the sorry, I got distracted here.
It's all right. You're talking about the one for the microbreweries, right?
Well, right. I mean,
is that what you're talking about now?
I mean, you know, it's very relative. I mean, both of these are 14th Amendment issues, you know, as aforementioned. But,
well, what's the deal with the microbrewery side of it? So they're trying to what? They're trying to make them get a distributor license? What are they trying to make them do?
Well, constitutionally speaking, when they were lobbying, they were trying to say, oh, you have a tap room in your microbrewery, you can only serve 72 ounces. So you couldn't come and sample and then take, you know, like, you know, what they call a growler. It's a half gallon, 64 ounces. So you couldn't, you know, have a pint or 2 pints and, take what you liked with you. And, you
okay.
know, that clearly affects their business, you know. I mean.
And understand, I have a special place in my heart for microbreweries. It's always actually been a dream of mine to run one. But I guess what is it that they're trying to accomplish with this? What are they trying to accomplish with this bill? I mean, what are they trying to?
Well, ultimately, I feel it's very relative to what, you know, the proposed increase and, they're talking about raising the cigarette tax and they're talking about expanding and raising gambling. I feel like really they're trying, certain people in the legislature feel like, you know, taxing our vices is the only way to go. You know, what people enjoy personally. I mean, vices is like, not the right word for it.
It's taxing, you know, minority behavior. It's taxes on minority behavior, and that's typically anymore what taxes get passed because the majority doesn't object to minority behaviors being taxed.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think that's what I was looking for. I have to keep this a little bit short here, Ken.
No, you're fine. I appreciate you calling in and giving us an update on that. We got to move on anyway. We got about 15 minutes left in the show, and I got to get to a couple more topics. So,
excellent. There has been introduced Senate Bill 80 before I leave you, which would keep anything regarding United Nations rather. It's into 21 out of Kentucky, so it's very important. I wanted to mention that before I left. Thank you for having me on, Ken. And I look forward to the convention next weekend, and we want to see you do some good things. Thank you much.
Thank you, and we'll talk to you next week, man. Thank you. All right, folks, we're going to move right into the gun issue because we only have, like I mentioned, about 15 minutes left, and Frank's back with us. Frank, give us an update.
Well, we've been having some rally. Well, we've had one big rally here in Lexington. They had another rally, I think, in Frankfort. And I think Monday in Mount Sterling they're going to have a Second Amendment rally. We've had several sheriffs in Kentucky, Denny Pyman in Jackson County, and then another sheriff up in northern Kentucky. And is it Jeff Kidwell? Was that his name?
Kidwell is the sheriff of Campbell.
All right. Two sheriffs have taken pledges not to go along with any gun grabs or anything unconstitutional regarding Second Amendment rights. They've basically sworn to uphold the Constitution and to ignore any federal mandates, which would be unconstitutional. So we're trying to raise awareness. We're trying to get people involved in standing up for gun rights. The way that people can do that, the way we're trying to do it here in Lexington, is calling the city council members, emailing the city council members, whatever town you live in, get a hold of the officials and ask them, where do you stand on the Second Amendment? Do you believe in the Second Amendment? Do you think it's our rights to have whatever guns we want to have? Do you think that guns ought to be regulated? Pin them down, and if somebody's not pro-gun, get them out of office. Do whatever you can to get somebody else in there that is for the Second Amendment. This is something that's going to come at us full force, I believe, in a very short amount of time, like probably less than 2 years. There's a UN Agenda 21. I don't know if it's Agenda 21 or not. It's a UN proposal with a four-year deadline that Barack Obama signed, where they have to implement this. Is it by 2016 or 2017 that they want to basically get everybody's guns from them? So this is going to happen fast. There's going to be a lot of law enforcement that's just going to do whatever the federal government tells them to do, because our states are deeply in debt. We can't really say no here in Kentucky to the federal government. We have a governor that's unwilling to say no to the federal government. So many of these sheriff's offices and local law enforcement offices depend heavily on federal money for their departments, for their budgets.
Yep.
And so whenever there's federal money, there's federal strings attached. In my opinion, and this is a gross generality, but I think it's true, that many people in law enforcement simply do what they're told. You know,
yes.
if they've got an order from a superior, they're going to carry it out no matter what that order is. And that's unfortunate, but I believe it's true.
Well, and I think you're right on that. I in a way, I don't necessarily blame them per se, other than they have sworn an oath to protect the Constitution generally, but and enforce the laws. But only bone of contention there is, you know, when you as an individual are facing the choice between defying, you know, doing what's right and, you know, losing your job, it's kind of a hard decision to be in. Now, I think there are ways, though, to balance that and work within, you know, a particular police department. And I hope to actually talk to an officer about this kind of stuff soon. You know, there are ways to resolve this without being confrontational within the department, but try to come up with some sort of strategy on, you know, hey, man, I this doesn't feel right. And, you know, ask an attorney, ask the attorney general, ask somebody, hey, is this the law? What's the deal? And at least try to get clarification and don't just take orders because they're orders, but do so because they have been deemed constitutional and are the right thing to do.
My take on that, Ken, is living here in Kentucky, which way do you think the governor's going to go on that? Which way do you think Jack Conway is going to go on that? I can tell you which way Jack Conway's going to go on that. He's going to be a gun grabber. There's no doubt in my mind which way his office is going to rule on this. They don't care about constitutionality. They don't. They just want to do what they want to do. And so the Constitution has been shredded, in my opinion, particularly here in Kentucky. Across the country, there's other states rising up now, and there's been a number of state resolutions and state laws passed which say they will defy any attempts at the federal government to infringe upon the Second Amendment. But in Kentucky, I don't trust our current governor's office. I don't trust, Jack Conway as an attorney. Is that his title, Attorney General?
Yes.
Of Kentucky. He's not going to stand up for the Constitution. He's going to do whatever the federal government tells him to do.
I would beg to differ with you on Conway, and here's why. I agree with you on Beshear. Beshear is done with politics. He has no future. He's already said he has no interest in running for any further office. He's done. And essentially, it's interesting, he said it this early, but basically he's lame ducked himself very, very early on in his second term. I don't understand why politicians do that. I'm not running again. Dude, you wouldn't have to run again for like 3 years. Why are you telling us this now? You're saying you're a lame duck.
Right.
That scares me, actually. But Conway wants to be governor.
I'm grateful. I'm grateful to do that. Go ahead.
Well, but Conway wants to be governor of the state. And, you know, there is no issue. And it's funny, we talk about, and I talk to people out of the state, I talk to people in the state, there's one liberty issue that damn near every Kentuckian gets, and that's gun rights. If there's one thing this state is very, very good for, it's gun rights. And I don't think that Conway is going to be able to come out against gun rights and have any legitimate shot of ever becoming governor
of the
state.
And run for governor. You got a point there. You've got a good point there. I agree with you.
So, you know, the upside is, and I guess the point is, that we, the people of the state, do have a means of putting pressure on politicians. If they want to have any future in this state, they have to do what we want. And there is no doubt in my mind that firearms freedom in general is what the people of this state want. And, you know, there's very good reasons why, you know, some of our mutual friends have been pushing these Kentucky Firearms Freedom Act and things like that, things that in a state that was much less gun-friendly would never even see the light of day. They would never be proposed, and yet here we see them introduced to the House and get kicked around, and people talk about them, and there's a good bit of support out there for these types of issues because it's Kentucky and because of the people want it.
That's one thing, you know, I think Kentucky is on the forefront of is gun rights. I wish we were on the forefront of some other issues. You know, one of them, of course, being industrial hemp. And I meant to say earlier that the House side of the state legislature is going to hear the House version of the industrial hemp bill Wednesday morning at 8 a.m. So
thank you. I meant to bring that up before.
We need to be there at the committee in force as much as people can be. And I know it's hard for people to get off of work and all that. But this is one of those things where when people show up at these committee meetings, it makes a difference. It actually influences them to vote. It shows that there's a strong interest out there on a particular issue. Quite often there's nobody there for many issues, for really important issues. There won't be a single civilian, and by civilian I mean non-lobbyist, to attend these things.
Yeah, and I will mention as well, you know, since it's my district, Tom McKee is the head of that committee that's planning on trying to kill this bill. I would love to ask, I really want the folks in my district, if you live in Pendleton County, Harrison County, southeastern Campbell County, or Robertson County, please, please, please call down to Frankfort and leave a message for Tom McKee and ask him to stop blocking the industrial hemp bill. That's all the message you need to leave. It's very quick, it's very easy, very painless to do, but it can make a significant impact. They're not going to be getting calls from average people around the state asking them to stop the hemp bill. We've already seen by this poll from the Courier Journal referenced earlier that there's 65% support for industrial hemp in the state of Kentucky. We are in the popular on our side.
It would be even higher if more farmers knew about it. There's an amazing amount of people that just really don't know anything about hemp. There hasn't been anybody growing it in this state since the mid-1940s. So, you know, that's in farming terms, that's three generations ago. Three generations of farmers have never grown hemp.
Sure. And, you know, you tell them, hey, man, here's a crop that it may not save your farm, but it's an option. You know, the thing is, you know, farming is competitive like any other market. And if you give other options out there, hey, it may not be right for you, Mr. Farmer, but your main competition may decide he's going to cut back on whatever it is you both grow and grow some hemp instead, which in turn actually makes your crop more valuable. By giving
even if you're not selling hemp to the market, the things you can use for your own farm that you can produce yourself from hemp, feedstock and like we were saying, you know, biodiesel, you can save yourself probably more money than you're going to spend in producing it yourself, in making your own operation more independent. You don't have to buy fertilizers. You don't have to buy pesticides for hemp. It's a great rotational crop. There's so many reasons to grow hemp, and I can't really give you a good reason not to.
Yeah, and we've had Katie on here on the show. Anybody who listens knows, and you should go back. If you didn't hear the shows that had Katie from the Industrial Hemp Museum, or the Kentucky Hemp Museum on the show, go back and listen to those shows. Very, very informative shows. Learn about the issue. It is something that can help. It can help Kentucky. And, you know, it's not going to be the silver bullet. It's not going to cure all our woes. It's not the magic elixir. We're not talking snake oil sales here. It's just an option that can help people. And the only thing stopping is this bogus, silly fear out there that somebody may grow a marijuana plant somewhere. And to let that
be... Like they're not doing that now. Like they can't do that now. And then the thing is, the marijuana grower's worst nightmare would be for industrial hemp to be growing right next to where he's trying to grow marijuana because of the cross-pollination issues. No marijuana grower wants to be within 5 miles of an industrial hemp field.
And that's the other part of it, too. The whole issue, it drives me crazy that it gets bogged down in a drug war thing rather than in common sense. And it is literally or very much in my mind, it is very promising that given the results of this poll, you look at this poll from the Courier Journal, and they show that 65% support hemp, but only 39% support full legalization of marijuana. That means that there's at least 25% that get it, right? They know that there's a difference, and that is so promising for me that people get it. I mean, that's really the key, is that we need to teach people, you know, the differences here. And being informed is not a bad thing. That's good for people in general. Be informed about issues. Well, we've only got a few minutes left, Frank, and I want to hit the gun thing one more time. What's going on next? What do we have coming up? What do we have? I know this past Saturday in Boone County, yesterday in Boone County, they had a day of resistance rally, and I was told that thousands showed up to that, there was a pro-Second Amendment rally in Boone County.
That's fantastic. One of the things I'm thinking about doing here in Lexington, and I haven't decided whether or not to do it, we're coming up on the 20th anniversary of the massacre at Waco, Texas. The anniversary of the start of the siege is February 28th. I think the siege was either 50, I think it was 51 days. So sometime in mid-April was when they burned the compound to the ground. There were 76 men, women, and children killed in that massacre caused by the ATF, now the BATFE, and the FBI. And if you want to see some really good footage of the investigation and the actual event itself, there's several good videos out there on YouTube. One is Waco Rules of Engagement. That's probably the best video I've ever seen on the whole episode from start to finish and the subsequent cover-up. And what's amazing to me is when you look at the players involved in that particular cover-up, you had President Bill Clinton, you had current Vice President Joe Biden, and current Senator Chuck Schumer, who all three did very well in their political careers after Waco. And one of the things that they did was they stonewalled and sided with law enforcement and just swept the whole thing under the rug. The documentary just appalling.
Well, we have, we just had that guy Dorner that was, going around in California, and both the Waco, Texas thing and this ended it with the people being burned alive, and that's very awful. The role of law enforcement. We talked about this last week or the week before. The role of law enforcement is to get people to face a jury. And Frank, I think if you recall, we're just about out of time, brother.
All right.
Face a jury of their peers and to, have due process. And when law enforcement acts outside of that realm and deprives people of due process, it's bad for all of us. It doesn't matter how guilty they are, how crazy they are, any of that stuff. They label the people in Waco. Remember the wackos from Waco? They label those people that way. But doggone, folks, if they don't have due process, then no one has due process. Every American citizen is guaranteed due process no matter what crime they're accused of doing, no matter what crime they're supposed to have committed, they're guaranteed due process. Folks, we're out of time. Thanks again for tuning in to another edition of Liberty Unbridled, the My View Matters Radio Network. Back here next week, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Hope to see you then. Have a good week.